Good morning, everyone. It is 9 a.m., March 9th, 2023. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Huffert and Julie Fedorchak, so we have a quorum. This is a One Oak Rockies Midstream siting application. It is case number PU-23-15. And I don't have any opening comments. Is you, Sherry?
No, I do not.
And Julia's portfolio holder, do you have any opening comments?
No. Well, first of all, this is thank you to staff for doing a thorough review of this on the front end. Due to the company's request to kind of circumvent the siting process, which is something we do pretty rarely, I think that was really important and sets the tone for a good conversation today. And I look forward to kind of going through it as if it was a siting hearing, maybe not to that level of detail, but I do think it's really important that we cover all those main issues here today. So that's kind of my expectation for the next hour, however long it takes us. So appreciate the opportunity and the good team you have on the line, Casey, and look forward to getting through it this morning.
I will just say one of our bills is scheduled for hearing at 10:15. So at about 10, I'll be stepping out, but I will certainly review all the testimony and everything if we're not done by then and participate in the final decision. But I will be stepping out and just want everyone to know the reason why. So beyond the three of us, if we could go around the room and have everyone at the table as well as the witnesses that are dialing in identify themselves, please.
Rob Frank, staff.
Brian Johnson, staff.
Victor Shook, staff.
Casey Fury with Crowley Fleck, local council for One Oak Rockies Midstream. And we do have several representatives of One Oak appearing virtually today, as well as a representative of Emergent, who is One Oak's consultant, appearing virtually. So I'm going to go ahead and kick it off. Michael, would you like to start introductions, introduce yourself, your position with One Oak, and then we can go around to the rest of the team, please?
Sure. My name is Michael Daly, and I am senior legal counsel for One Oak and handle our construction projects primarily.
Thank you, Brian.
Manager of Project Development for One Oak.
Brian, can you please just state that again? It didn't come through. It looks like you may still be.
Yeah, we're having a in the room. Paul and I are in. We can barely hear the service commission. Here, I don't think the way to adjust your volume. We're all the way down.
Yep.
But my name is Brian Wallen, manager of project development and execution for One Oak.
And Brian, can you hear me better now?
Yes, that'd be great. Thank you.
Pulled the microphone a little closer. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Colton.
Colton Birch, engineer here at One Oak, been managing project pipeline projects and meter facility projects for just over the last 6 years.
And Rachel?
Hi, I'm Rachel Grant. I'm the environmental project manager at One Oak, and I manage construction projects here at One Oak.
And then Maddie.
Yep, Maddie Crumlady with Emergent, and I'm Emergent's environmental project manager.
Casey, what was Brian's role? I missed that one.
Brian's role, he oversees like pipeline operations. Brian, can you please provide us with your formal title with One Oak?
Manager of project development and execution.
Okay. And where are the most of the One Oak folks based or calling in from?
We're calling in from Tulsa.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All of us. Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Go right ahead, Casey.
Thank you, and thanks for the opening comments. It was our plan this morning, just because of the nature of the application, to kind of walk through and provide a very kind of watered-down overview of the project, but it would follow the similar format as to what we would present at a siting hearing. So it sounds like that aligns with what you're looking for, Commissioner Fedorchuk. To start out, we appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today and to have our representatives appear virtually. It does make things a lot more easier. Just to start off with the nature of our filing and why we filed this way, One Oak submitted an amendment to amend the underlying certificate that they have for their Cherry Creek pipeline. And so essentially this extension segment now aligns with an existing pipeline that they have. And so a majority of the corridor overlaps with an existing One Oak corridor. And so really what this project does is it would install a pipeline within a primarily previously sited corridor. And so arguably, before this amendment was filed, we reached out to staff and council to just discuss process and procedure with respect to the filing, just because this is somewhat unique with respect to infrastructure, a new line coming into a ready sited corridor. And there was discussion that an option may have been to actually file a siting certification for a project improvement because it is within an existing project corridor. There were some unique just nuances to that because the existing project corridor and that particular pipeline is owned by a different One Oak affiliate. And so there was some nuance as to whether or not it would make sense to have a separate affiliate be filing a certification for a different affiliates under a different affiliate's corridor certificate and route permit. And so we thought that it made most sense in this particular proceeding and to just keep it clean to just go ahead and amend One Oak's underlying certificate, which would essentially just extend their existing Cherry Creek line to then kind of align with the Lonesome Creek pipeline instead of going the certification route. And so I just wanted to provide that explanation and background to kind of give you a flavor as to how we arrived at filing an amendment for this proceeding.
Randy, I have a question about that. So Casey, as you go, can you direct me to the maps that show where the new corridor is different from the other one? Because I had a hard time picking that out.
We don't have maps in the application that depict that, but we are prepared to discuss that in more detail. And The differences are very, very negligible. And I'm going to go ahead and I'll let Colton talk to this in more detail, but I'll just provide an overview because I think it may make more sense to have that information as we walk through. There are 14 instances along the line where the corridor extends outside of the previously certificated corridor, and those instances are just for temporary workspace. So the actual pipeline itself is located within the previously certificated corridor. All of those, a majority of those 14 instances, the extension is on average around approximately 12 feet. There are two instances where the extension would be at a maximum 60 feet outside of the original sited corridor. And so those impacts cumulatively, or the temporary impacts, are less than 1 acre in total.
Got it.
Okay. And so when that was, at this scale of the project maps that we provided, it wouldn't be really detectable because it is so negligible. And Colton can provide some more discussion about why those areas were necessary. But hopefully that kind of gives you
that'll be great.
Okay. And so I think at this point it makes sense just for us to go ahead and jump on in. And Colton is the project manager for the project. So we're going to, a lot of our initial discussion will kind of focus on some back and forth with Colton. Colton, can you please just start us off by providing an overview of the project generally?
Sure. Could I get the map pulled up, the overview map that was provided to the PSC?
Sure.
So the proposed project, it's 4 miles long, 12 3/4 inch diameter pipe. The project is an extension of the existing One Oak Cherry Creek pipeline, cited in case number PU-17-483. That is the that purple colored line coming in from the top of the map down to the center. That is the existing Cherry Creek line. The proposed project, Cherry Creek Extension, is the red line that extends on. The project's completely located inside of McKenzie County, North Dakota, and it originates at the existing Lonesome Creek gas plant and terminates at the existing One Oak Antelope Creek pipeline junction.
Just to, because my eyes aren't that good, which map is it in the book? Oh, thank you, Casey. Sorry. Go ahead, Colton.
Colton, can you please just provide an overview regarding the purpose of the project and why it's being proposed?
Sure. The proposed project is to deliver NGLs into One Oak Bakken Pipeline's Dimmicks Lake Pipeline and Garden Creek Pipeline that pass through that Antelope Creek Junction. So it's giving us additional takeaway capacity from the Lonesome Creek gas plant and providing that capacity to those two lines there at Antelope Creek Junction. It's estimated that the initial throughput would increase to 70,000 barrels per day with a maximum of 160,000 barrels once the project's complete.
And let's move on to talking about the requested corridor. Can you please just generally describe the requested corridor that's contained within the amendment application?
Yep. Generally, the corridor is 170 feet wide. There are, as mentioned before, a few isolated areas where larger for constructability purposes. The project's paralleling One Oak Bakken Pipeline's Lonesome Creek Pipeline. Within 100 feet, the proposed pipeline itself is completely located within the Lonesome Creek Pipeline sited corridor, cited in case number PU-15-137. The location of this project was selected as preferential due to proximity of existing infrastructure and the ability or the opportunity to co-locate and minimize impacts.
Great, thank you. And then I briefly touched on, kind of explaining some of the areas where the temporary workspaces extend outside of the Lonesome Creek corridor. Can you please just circle back to that discussion and kind of highlight some of those points? Or confirming that there are 14 locations where that extension occurs?
So all instances where we exceed the existing PSC corridor is due to bores where we will be crossing county line roads or HDDs to avoid or minimize impact to wetlands, water bodies, and other environmental sensitive areas. So that's what's driving those extra temporary workspaces. It would be, we provide these spaces to the contractor, but it's not they will not necessarily be used to their fullest extent. That'll be determined by contractor at the time in the field, but they will not exceed the temporary workspaces that are provided to them.
And
so
then,
this is a worst case scenario.
And then just to kind of circle back, are the areas extending outside of the existing corridor, are they approximately less than 1 acre total?
Correct.
Can you please describe some of the above ground facilities that are associated with the proposed project?
Before you do that, Casey.
There'll be...
Oh, Colton, can you? Wait one moment. Commissioner Fedorchuk has a question.
Are they those notched out locations on the corridor? Are those some of them, or is that something different entirely?
That's a great question. Colton, do you have the application in front of you?
I do not.
Do you have access to it?
Yes.
Okay. Can you please turn to Exhibit B.2? And it's a project overview map. And so it really just kind of, it's a one-pager showing the corridor of the project. And there are various kind of, I guess, bump outs is the best way to describe them along the route. And Commissioner Fedorchuk has asked if the instances where there are these areas that you see kind of jutting out, if those correspond to the areas where the route extends outside, or excuse me, where the corridor extends outside of Lonesome Creek's corridor, and kind of essentially just provide a general overview as to maybe why we see those jettisons occurring.
So as I mentioned before, these are only located at locations where we will be using a bore rig or have an HDD, a horizontal directional drill rig. Those are needed due to pullback spaces and storage of the pipe, as well as extra spoils for the bore pits themselves.
And then so those kind of bump outs are associated, as you just described, with the HDD pullout areas. Is that correct?
Correct.
Did that address your question?
It does.
Okay,
yep.
Great.
Thank you, Casey.
Colton, can you please describe above ground?
Well, I just want to make sure I understand. So there's probably just a couple of those, maybe at mile marker 1.5 and at 2.0, that have to do with county roads, I would expect, and the rest of them must be wetlands or some type of environmental thing that you're boring under, correct?
That's my understanding, correct. Is that correct, Colton?
That's correct.
Okay.
That is more visible on the these maps where you get closer. You can see, like, oh, there's a stream, there's the bore.
Yeah.
All right. And so there is some above-ground facilities that will be installed and some additional work that needs to occur to facilitate the project. Colton, could you please briefly just walk us through the scope of the above-ground facilities associated with the project?
Sure. There's some work that'll be taking place inside of the Lonesome Creek plant's sited footprint. That work will be to connect the existing Cherry Creek pipeline to the extension. That consists of approximately 1,500 feet in facility piping. All of that piping will be below grade. There will be a installation of an above ground meter or pot meter lock valve, and all this is inside the fencing there at Lonesome Creek.
And
work to take place. Oh, sorry.
Nope, you're fine. I was just going to ask if you could just please also explain some of the work that will occur at Antelope Junction.
Yep. Antelope Creek Junction is set to receive one new receiver and two new leak detection meter skids. The leak detection meter skids will be able to monitor pressure, temperature, as well as direct flow of the natural gas liquids to the Nimitz Lake Pipeline and Garden Creek Pipeline.
Great, thank you. And then with respect to easement status for the project, can you please provide an update regarding the status of easements that have been obtained?
ONEOK has received all but one of the right-of-way easements. The remaining easement is pending probate completion. There has been a baseline agreement between One Oak and the remaining landowner that has been reached. There is one landowner residence that is located within 500 feet of the route. One Oak has received a waiver from that landowner.
Did you guys file that waiver?
Yes, it's an application. And then Colton, just for a little additional kind of follow-up, that landowner with respect to the Lonesome Creek pipeline, that landowner was also within 500 feet of that pipeline. And so this is the same landowner. And so this landowner has executed a waiver for both of those projects. Okay. Correct, Colton?
That is correct.
So the easement that's kind of tied up in probate, you guys have a construction schedule that calls for constructing beginning next month. Are you confident that is gonna that easement will be secured prior to that? Or
That's a great question, and that segues into our next discussion okay. item, which is the project schedule. Okay. And so, Colton, do you want to provide an update regarding kind of the anticipated time frame of construction?
Commissioner, you're correct. One Oak initially requested a construction start date of April of this year, as indicated in our application. However, due to the uncertainty of the probate completion timeline with that final landowner, One Oak's commercial team is evaluating a spring/summertime construction of 2023 versus a spring/summertime construction of 2024. That puts our in-service date to be determined pending that completion of the final landowner probate and procurement of the final easement.
Okay, just to hear, make sure I heard you correctly. So you're putting it, you're contemplating doing it in 24, not 23 because of the probate?
It's correct. It's all dependent on this probate completion timeline.
Got it. How long is that easement? Is that with the landowner in probate?
It constitutes less than 20% of the overall route.
And then just to confirm, otherwise you have everything secured?
Correct.
And are they an easement holder for the existing line, I would assume?
Say that one more time.
The landowner that's in probate, that easement, are they an easement holder for the existing line?
Yes, we have. One Oak has several lines that cross this landowner. We've worked with them closely in the past.
Okay. Do you anticipate any problems with them?
No, One Oak already has the baseline agreement with the landowner. We're just pending signature at this point, based off of that probate completion.
Okay. Thank you.
With respect to testing of the line, can you please, Colton, just briefly explain the scope of testing that'll be completed before the project's put into service?
All welds on this project are going to be non-destructively tested to ensure quality. The project's also 100% hydrostatically pressure tested. This is done to ensure there are no leaks present prior to being placed in service.
Thank you. And then with respect to leak detection and overall monitoring of the pipeline, can you please just briefly discuss what One Oak will implement with respect to the project to address leak detection and overall monitoring?
Pipeline will be monitored for leaks in several different ways. That's including 24-hour per day continuous monitoring of key pipeline parameters by our trained control staff. that's using systems like CPM and SCADA. In conjunction with that, there's going to be aerial patrols of the pipeline and continuing surveillance by operations personnel in the area. We also periodically utilize internal inspection pools, which check for corrosion damage to the pipeline. The safety of the public and the environment is our priority, and these methods help us detect and respond to leaks before they even occur.
Thank you. Switching gears just slightly, with respect to other permitting that's required for the project, are there any other permits that One Oak needs to obtain for this line?
There are 5 county crossing permits required by McKenzie County that we need to get. We do not request those until all landowners have been signed. Working with One Oak right away, those are expected to only take a week to 2 weeks after submission for them. So again, back to that pending probate.
And so just to kind of clarify your comments, to the extent that the additional county permitting is needed, One Oak would obtain those permits prior to them being needed for the line and then file copies with the commission?
Correct.
And then are there any other permitting or permits that would otherwise be required for water discharges? I'm sorry, was someone else trying to speak?
Additionally, oh, yeah, I was just going to hop in here. Additionally, there's our hydrostatic discharge and dewatering permit that's required as well for the permit for the line. We will file that once construction is started or once we have a construction start date determined, because that triggers the start of discharge monitoring reports to start.
Thanks, Rachel. And maybe if we can pull down the map now, that would be helpful. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Colton at this time? We were going to kind of segue into discussing environmental studies and surveys that were conducted for the project.
Maybe I missed it. There's no valves or above ground facilities at any point in the line. It's just end to end, all underground.
There is a mainline block valve setting that is located within the Lonesome Creek facility footprint.
Okay.
There will not be any above ground outside of existing One Oak facilities.
Okay. And I might have missed this as well, too. Is there cathodic protection on this pipeline as well, if I'm saying that right?
There will be, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Just to better understand operationally how this works, is this an extension of the Cherry Creek pipeline?
It is.
Okay. And so that's functionally all. You'll operate it as one line, right? And where
Correct.
Does Cherry Creek start?
Cherry Creek starts at the State Line plant,
okay.
Gas plant.
And is that in Montana?
No, it's in North Dakota.
It is. Is it just on the border almost?
It is, yes.
Okay. And it parallels what line does it parallel?
The extension,
yeah.
It is paralleling the One Oak Lonesome Creek NGL line.
And that just goes from Lonesome Creek to Demick's Lake Pipeline?
To the Antelope Creek Junction.
Okay, and then it connects into Demick's Lake?
And Garden Creek, yes, ma'am.
And Garden Creek. So there's two lines there, and I'm looking at your map that you had up. It shows one green, but I think there's a purple underneath it. The Garden Creek and Demick's Lake parallel each other, correct?
For the most part, their routes are parallel. You can see on the right-hand side of the map, there's a deviation.
Yep, I remember when we actually permitted that. Okay, so it goes from Lonesome Creek to Antelope Creek. It parallels the Lonesome Creek, and both of those are NGL lines. Right.
The Cherry Creek line is operating as an NGL, yes.
Okay. And is the Lonesome Creek line also an NGL
line? Also.
Yes.
It is also an NGL line.
I got it. Okay. I think I better understand those. Is it one connection to the Demicks Lake and Garden Creek, or do we have two separate connections? How does that work at the Antelope Creek Junction?
So there's we're using the two leak detection meters with control valves. Those will be controlled by Tulsa Control Center, and that will allow us to take the flow from the Cherry Creek extension and divert it to the Demicks Lake or the Garden Creek as needed.
Okay. And then when you're monitoring these lines, it just gets incorporated into the Cherry Creek the Cherry Creek pipeline monitoring seamlessly.
Correct.
And then is whoever's monitoring these lines, I'm watching that entire system, I would assume.
Correct.
And where is your monitoring center? Is it in Tulsa?
Yes, it's here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. All lines are monitored 24/7 by trained personnel.
Okay. And how many folks, so the folks that will be monitoring this system right here, what else are they in charge of monitoring? How big of an area and how many lines approximately?
I would have to circle up with the control center supervisory staff to provide an answer.
Okay. You can send us that after the fact.
I have a question. How many staff are on site? Do you have any staff at the Lonesome Creek gas plant? How many are on site?
Yes, Lonesome Creek gas plant is a manned facility. There again, I'll have to get with the supervisor to know how many operators are on site at all times. The Antelope Creek Junction is not a manned site.
Okay. And then I just have one other question. I understand the monitoring that is done by in Tulsa. When do you do any line inspection, like boots on the ground, like walking and checking, and if so, how often?
Yes, there's a continuous monitoring by the local operations staff. There's also aerial patrols that are scheduled. I don't know the rate or the how often it's done. Every 2 weeks, I think is correct.
Okay, thank you. Colton, is it your understanding that the patrols of the line are done in accordance with PHMSA regulations and that this line would be integrated into One Oak's existing monitoring plan, which has been presented before the commission at prior proceedings?
Yes, it will be implemented into One Oak's plan.
And to the extent that you have specific questions, we can follow up with that information.
I think I feel like I've often heard that those patrols are like required 26 times a year and not to exceed 3 weeks or something like that.
That sounds correct, Commissioner.
That's
but
correct.
The aerial patrols.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I don't have any more questions for Colton, I don't think.
Okay, you can move on then.
Great. Maddie, can you hear me? Okay, great. Maddie, if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself. I know it kind of is repetitious of prior introductions, but I do think that would be helpful just to segue into discussion regarding kind of environmental aspects with respect to the project.
Sure. Yep. Maddie Crumleady again with Mergent. Mergent was contracted by One Oak to do environmental studies and surveys for the project. And then I was Mergent's project manager for the project.
Great, thank you. Can you just provide like a general overview of the scope of studies and surveys that Mergent conducted for the project?
Yep, absolutely. So Mergent studies included both desktop reviews and field surveys. Those studies and surveys included review for cultural resources, water resources, wildlife and threatened endangered species habitat, trees and shrubs, and noxious weeds. Our studies found that the corridor that's proposed consists mainly of agricultural fields, rangeland, and naturally vegetated drainage ways. I'll start by just giving a brief overview of cultural resource studies. Because this line parallels Lonesome Creek, we did conduct a class one file search. That's a review of the records that are on file at the SHPO's office. And it shows you what other studies have happened in the area and what those results would have been. And that helped confirm that the majority of the proposed corridor had been previously surveyed back in 2015 for the Lonesome Creek project. SHPO did review a report in 2015 from those studies and concurred with the findings in February of 2015. Since that data was available and still valid, Mergent conducted additional surveys for any areas that fell outside of that previously surveyed corridor, and those studies were conducted in September and October 2022. In total, it amounted to about 10.6 acres of additional cultural resource field survey. Those surveys did not identify any archaeological resources, and the project submitted a report including both the Class 1 and Class 3 field survey findings to the SHPO. On November 22nd of 2022, the SHPO concurred with the report findings, agreeing that no significant sites were affected. And a copy of that correspondence was included in the original application, Exhibit D.
Great, thank you.
Yep.
Are there any questions regarding cultural resources?
No? Yep.
Okay. Yeah, if you could please just segue into discussing wetlands and water bodies.
Okay. Yep, so additionally, there was natural resource surveys done. That did include wetland and water body field delineations. Unlike cultural, though, surveys were conducted for the entire proposed corridor so that up-to-date natural resource data would be available for analysis. And those surveys occurred also in September and October of last year. The wetland resource delineation found that there were four wetlands inside of the proposed corridor. However, only one of those wetlands is actually crossed by the pipeline center line. That's at about milepost 3.5. And in that location, the pipeline is being installed via horizontal directional drill. So impacts to that wetland would be avoided during construction. There's also one additional wetland at milepost approximately 0.9 on the northern end of the project that isn't crossed by the center line, but is crossed by the workspace. And so in this location, the workspace was reduced to minimize impacts to that wetland. In total, the wetland impact is going to be less than 1/100 of an acre. Work inside that wetland would qualify for and be conducted in compliance with the Army Corps' Nationwide Permit 12. And following construction, the area would be restored to pre-construction conditions. There was also, from the wetland water body surveys, one unnamed intermittent stream identified, and that's at approximate milepost 2.5. And again, in that location, the pipeline is going to be installed using horizontal directional drill to avoid impacts to the stream.
Thank you.
I guess if there's any questions on wetlands and water bodies.
No, I think you can go ahead and segue into discussing kind of the species review.
Sure. Okay, so then concurrent with those wetland water body surveys, Emergent also was surveying for threatened endangered species habitat. But before going out to do the surveys, our field staff reviews the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's IPAC tool. That tool provides a list of potentially present federally listed species in the county that we know what to look for in the field. Specifically, field surveys did not identify any suitable habitat for piping plover, and that finding was something that the Fish and Wildlife Service agreed with in their response to our consultation letter. Our surveys did identify that there could be suitable migratory stopover habitat for whooping crane and roofer redknot in the project area. One Oak would train all construction personnel on proper identification of those species and the procedures if one of those birds is spotted within a mile of the project. If a whooping crane or roofer redknot is spotted within a mile of the project during construction, then all work would be suspended until the bird has left the area. And this approach and strategy also aligns with what was in Fish and Wildlife Service's letter to One Oak. The field surveys did identify 5 locations of low quality Dakota skipper habitat within the corridor. However, all 5 of those locations would be avoided, or impacts to those habitat locations would be avoided by installing the pipeline using horizontal directional drill to go under the habitat. And in the December 2022 letter from the Fish and Wildlife Service, they also agreed with our analysis around Dakota skipper and confirmed additionally that there's no known populations of Dakota skipper near the project. The survey is conducted in September and October, also looked for trees and shrubs and identified 2 areas of wooded vegetation along the corridor. Those are at approximate mile posts 2.5 and 3.5. And again, in both of those areas, the pipeline plans are to install it via horizontal directional drill, thereby avoiding impacts to potential northern long-eared bat habitat during construction. If it turns out that trees need to be cleared in those areas for operational reasons, such as those aerial surveillance practices, then the plan would be to clear the trees outside of the active bat season. So that would mean clearing it between November 1st and March 31st when the bats are hibernating and not present on the landscape. If for some reason the trees needed to be cleared during the active period, then One Oak would do species-specific surveys to determine if northern long-eared bat are present and not clear unless there is a probable absence of northern long-eared bat. With both those construction practices, HDD, and timing restrictions, then that aligns with the Fish and Wildlife Service's response around northern long-eared bat to avoid potential impacts.
And Maddie, can we just take a pause real quick? I think there was a question with respect to one of your statements.
Maddie, this is Sherry. I didn't catch that when you were talking about clearing the shrubs, unless what with the spotted identifying the bats.
Yep.
Would you prohibit production? I think that's what the application said when I read it.
Yep. So northern long-eared bat, there is a window in which they're hibernating, and that's usually over winter. And so any tree clearing would occur when they're hibernating and not out on the landscape, you know, potentially using these trees. The species has recently been uplisted, meaning that it is now an endangered species. And so there's some new or more guidance coming out on how to deal with mitigation for northern long-eared bat impacts. And this approach to either avoiding all impacts to trees through HDD during summer and spring construction, and then waiting instead to do tree clearing when the bat is not likely to be present is kind of the planned approach. And that's something that then aligns with, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service's guidance around minimizing impacts on the species.
Thank you. Since you stopped, I have one question, and this might be something you need to provide after the fact, and it isn't real material to this, but it's a curiosity. The boars under the somewhat degraded Dakota Skipper landscape, and there's five of those, I think you said.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea, would you be able to provide a rough estimate of the cost of doing that? I'd just like to have that in the back of my head.
Sure, that's probably a question for Colton and the One Oak team to take that.
Colton, is that information that One Oak can provide?
I can circle back to that, and if it is, I will provide it over to the PSC.
Perfect. Thank you. And as long as you're still stopped, Maddie, one other question on the stream crossings. How many stream crossings was there in total?
Just one stream and one wetland crossing and one additional wetland in the works.
On the northern long-eared bat, I'd like to mention that we had several discussions during the preparation of our application in discussion about the northern long-eared bat, anticipating the
Rachel, you're starting to cut out there.
And
Rachel, we can't hear you.
Anticipate.
Can you hear us, Rachel?
Oh, I'm sorry, my audio cut out. I just want to make a quick to the number that we had several discussions in preparation of action.
Rachel, it sounds like maybe you have a bad connection because it's very, very choppy on our end.
Go ahead, Maddie.
Yeah, I think I know what Rachel's trying to say, and she just wanted to make sure that the commission knows that the northern long-eared bat, there were a lot of discussions on how to approach it and to do what's needed to minimize any potential impacts on the species. And that meant that if there were tree clearing needs on the project, that it would be planned outside of certain timing windows, the active season for the bat, just to make sure. So while that typically tree clearing would occur, you know, concurrent with the rest of the pipeline construction for this project, that may not be the case, and that was intentional.
One more question on the streams. Was there block valves on both sides of the stream crossing?
No. There's only one block valve located on the project, and it was not located. The location of it was not planned specific to the stream location.
Okay. Is that an ephemeral stream, or is it?
Maddie, can you please just describe the general nature of the stream that the project crosses? My understanding is
an intermittent stream.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
I guess I did have a little bit more to fill in on surveys and species, and that was just having to do with looking for eagles and raptor nests too. That is something that was conducted as part of those September-October surveys last year. And no nests were identified during those surveys. And additionally, Mergen and One Oak consulted with North Dakota Game and Fish and Fish and Wildlife Service, both of which confirmed that there's no known eagle nests within a mile of the project. Actually, the closest eagle nest to the project that's known is 5 miles south of the project. So we did take into consideration Game and Fish's response letter, which almost always includes a note about conducting aerial raptor surveys, but because there's no nests in the area, none were identified during surveys either, One Elk would do a pre-construction pedestrian survey to determine if any new nests for eagles or raptors, or if there's migratory bird nests, if any of those have developed in the project area since those fall 2022 surveys. So assuming that the construction's happening in that nesting season, there is a plan to make sure that there's no new nests in the project area. I guess there was, kind of speaking to agency consultations, some more Game and Fish also had recommended avoiding native prairie and wooded draws. And One Elk has cited this pipeline in a common corridor with Lonesome Creek Pipeline to lessen impacts on any native prairie. And as mentioned too, would be installing the pipeline beneath any wooded areas. It is noted in Game and Fish's response letter that they agreed and said that the project would not have any significant adverse effects on wildlife or wildlife habitat with these measures implemented that have been discussed so far today. There were consultations letters sent out to all 35 agencies that are in the North Dakota Administrative Code, plus a couple additional letters to local areas. And to date, all responses that have been received have been filed with the PSC, and we're not at this point anticipating any additional agency responses. I think Colton already covered this and Casey earlier, but on the environmental side, there's only one additional permit that's outstanding. That is for any water discharges due to construction dewatering or hydrostatic testing. And that's a permit that's typically obtained just prior to construction so that there isn't unnecessary monitoring reporting going on before activity even begins. I think that summarizes everything from our environmental studies and consultations, unless there's questions from the commission.
I have one. Maddie, as far as when you do field surveys, what kind of spacing do you do between the survey folks who are on the ground? How far between the folks who are walking that route?
Yep. That all depends on the survey type and the methodology for it. So for cultural resources, it's much more prescriptive, and I don't know if I have the spacing right off the top of my head, but there is in the guidelines for the state spacing requirements and methodology requirements, and all of the surveys that would have been conducted then for cultural resources would have followed those guidelines. And additionally are talked about in the report that the SHPO then gets a chance to review and concur with both our methodologies findings and the results and recommendations. For the species, habitat, tree, shrub, wetland water body surveys, I don't know if there's always a prescriptive distance between surveyors to do that, but they need to be able to cover the area and understand what they're looking at. So it might be a meandering thing or all that. But I don't know off the top of my head if we have an exact spacing for natural resource surveys.
And
of the wetland water body delineations, though, would follow Army Corps protocols. So those were formally done.
Would you be able to provide that, what the spacing was for the environmental surveys?
Sure, yeah. Just seeing here, to back up to the cultural at least, those were conducted at transects no more than 15 meters apart. And we can follow up, I guess, with more information on the specific methodologies used during our natural resource surveys. It should also be summarized in the natural resource report that is in appendix, let's see here, I think it was appendix, or sorry, exhibit C.2 of the original application.
Okay, and those environmental surveys, is that a single on-site survey, or are there separate distinct surveys?
Yep. So Mergent uses one crew to conduct cultural resource surveys using archaeologists and then uses a second crew of surveyors, biologists, to do the full suite of natural resource surveys, including wetlands, water bodies, habitat, tree, shrub, weeds, etc. I guess I should also note maybe that the natural resource survey report was submitted to Fish and Wildlife Service as well for their review, and that way they could comment on our findings a little bit better when it comes to threatened endangered species. And at least based off of the response letter, we didn't see that they had any concerns over our survey methodologies.
Okay. And how about for raptor surveys? Is that a prescriptive spacing as well?
That would have been done concurrent as the surveyors were moving through the project corridor. They're looking line of sight out to see if there are any raptor nests visible during their surveys. So it's not that there's specific spacing within the survey corridor necessarily, but as they're moving through the corridor, they're looking line of sight outward to the broader project area to see if there's any nearby nests.
So I think you had stated the nearest raptor nest was 5 miles away from the project corridor. Mm-hmm. I would assume that was previously mapped versus something that you found new during this, because if you're just looking line of sight out there, you're not going to see much beyond, you know, a few hundred yards potentially.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that was not identified through the surveys. That was a known nest that came to us through North Dakota Game and Fish's data. So they keep a database of information related to known eagle nests, and that's how we learned that there was a nest at 5 miles away. And I guess to understand that at least they don't know about any other known nests in the area closer by.
Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Casey, I need to leave pretty soon for a hearing, but do noxious weeds fall under Maddie's expertise?
Yes.
Okay, so Maddie, question on noxious weeds, which I would argue, unlike northern long-eared bats, actually do exist up in this area. I presume that there are some and that you will be filing a mitigation plan or something with the McKinsey County Weed Board.
Yes, yeah, there wasn't a ton, but there were two populations of Canada thistle found during the September surveys, and additionally, there was a noxious weed plan developed and submitted to McKenzie County, and that weed plan was approved back in, I think it was December of 2022, by the County Weed Board.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That generally concludes the presentation that we had prepared, unless there are any additional questions or comments.
I don't actually have any more.
Okay, I'm not seeing any staff, anyone? None of your other witnesses had presentations? None of your other witnesses had presentations?
Yes, that concludes the presentation, Commissioner.
So is there any objection to any of the evidence that's been submitted here, either verbally or the written documentation being accepted into the record on the case?
No objection.
No objection.
Okay. I think this hearing is closed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for attending online. We appreciate it.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you.